We welcome to the show, Eddie Grant. How's it going?
Very badly, actually, outside. We're suffering from the volcano in St. Vincent. All the mud, slush, and ashes and stuff are making their way right here to us.
In Barbados. Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I hope that improves, definitely.
Well, so do I, because one doesn't know how long this can go on for. You know, it's not like the rain, you know, the rain will stop eventually. This will stop probably and start again.
Fingers crossed. Has it ever erupted before?
Yeah, I think many times before. The places that are volcanic tend to be like that, you know, after a while, it'll come back, and sometimes worse, sometimes less.
Yeah, you get some benefits out of it, but of course, when it erupts, it's a big problem.
Yeah, exactly.
So, Eddie, you have a new album out. What can you tell us about it?
The album's not new. The album, like all my albums, have been there for their time. This album is the last album that I made. It's just that I feel that this album deserves a shot, a better shot than it's gotten. And the fact that you don't know that, it tells me a lot.
So when did you originally do the album then?
The album was released about 4 years ago, 3 or 4 years ago.
Oh, right. No, I had no idea.
There you go. There you go. And it just proves itself that it's come out. Somebody's decided to play it, certainly play a lead track off of it. And it made the Heritage chart in England. So one has to hope that with a little more play and a little more notice that it may make number one in the national charts around the world. That's how it goes for me anyway. You know, I mean, most of my hits have taken a long time to come forward because of the independent nature of what I do. So you can't expect that it will, you know, do as well as the big boys can do it.
And do you like that? Do you like working independent?
I'm used to it. It's what I've done for the best part of my life, even when I've had to go with a major company because of their so-called better distribution. Today, you've got a whole different set of platforms that you can utilize. And I'm hoping that I'll be one of the first to actually get something out of it.
I really like Down the Road Again. It sounds like a classic Eddie Grant song to me.
Yeah. The more you dig, I suppose it's like a good well. The more you dig, the more you find. Down the Road Again, like all the tracks on the album, tells a story, a part of me, a part of my life, and maybe one day that will be a single, as they call it now.
I'm going down the road again. This ain't no rock and roll story. I'm going down the road again, looking for ring a bang glory. Shed some heavy load. I'm going down the road again, where the water's overflowing. I'm going down the road again, where the water's overflowing. Hey, I'll whiz on down the road. I got a lot to see to sow. I want a woman who understands. Bottle stove. I'm gonna drink your muddy wine. 35 slave men, them tanks could see and buy. Their starlight built this vision, and God bless the street, come to Pleasance with me. I'm going down the road again, where the waters overflowing. I'm going down the road again, where the waters overflowing. Yeah, upon this list of mine, Rex was 6'9", another victim of the snow. So many things you all should know. I'm going down the road again. This ain't no rock and roll story. I'm going down the road again, looking for ring of band glory. I'm going down the road again. Welcome to
I am not strictly speaking in reggae. Thank you very much for putting me there. But the album File on the Rocks certainly tells you that you can put it anywhere. And so, yeah, if you put it in reggae, fine. But it doesn't belong in any of those categories. The history of reggae music is, again, it was an independent affair. And out of that independent affair, you had to do what you can, which is singles, yes, cheap and nasty, put it out. If it does well, it does well. You know, it's just one of those anomalies that happen in the record business.
Yeah, so you don't like to be put into a box then of one category, I guess.
Please, not just yet. <You know?
laughs> Is the key to your music making catchy songs? I'm thinking of your classic songs like I Just Want to Dance and Electric Avenue. Do you think that's one of the keys to your success, really?
The key to my success, obviously, has to be the songs and the way that they're placed against rhythm and melody. Hopefully, the key to my songs lie in all three of those departments. Some people dance to them. Some people listen to them. You know, take your choice.
Yeah. And with the new album, isn't it? It's named after your birthplace, isn't it?
Yeah. It's Plaisance. Let me hear you say it. Plaisance.
Plaisance.
Oh, you're pretty good, man. Yeah, you're there. You're 80%. Yeah, Plaisance. It's the place where I was born and spent the first 12 years of my life.
And what was that like coming to the UK from there? Very different.
Oh, do you really want to know?
Yeah.
Coming to the UK, it's like Eddie Murphy coming to America. You know, it was such a massive transition. It's such a massive culture shock because nothing about England was like Guyana, or nothing in Guyana was like England. For a start, we didn't have snow. We didn't get much of it that year, but it was cold. It was extremely, extremely cold. You know, the way that Guyana is set up were independent little houses, and you had your little yard, and you had space to play in, and you didn't have to travel miles to go to Parliament Hill Fields to play. So that was a massive shock to me. And the way that the houses were arranged and basically thrown into a what you know as a basement, what I didn't know at all. And it was just cold and damp all the time. And so it really was a massive culture shock arriving there.
What was the process like of putting together this album? You said you did it 4 years ago, but can you remember?
Come on. I remember them all. It's just like doing any other Eddie Grant record. Turn up with the songs, you go into the studio, sit down there, it's just you and the engineer, and you burn because it's a tedious affair. But it's fun because you're trying things all the time, and you have the capacity and you have the opportunity to try those things. Then suddenly up comes this song, this thing that you only guessed about, but now at least you know about, and you spend ages and ages refining and refining and refining until one day you get bored with refining and say, well, this is good enough to go out there.
Electric Avenue was one of your biggest hits in 1983. What are your memories of that time?
Moving from London to Barbados, struggling really to put together an album which would have been a substantially much different album had I not lost my baggage on British Airways in transit, and discovering again a whole new way now of putting things together, because obviously the studio had to be built. The studio wasn't built. It was just a coach house or whatever it is that these places were called in Barbados. We spent a lot of time. In the day, I recorded Marcia Barrett from Boney M. The studio was not finished at all when we were doing this. So you had people knocking and carpenters running around in the control room, and that sort of thing was going on. And little sleep, if any. Myself and Frank Agarat, who was the engineer at the time, and he had made the transition from London, we spent a lot of time with these people's music. And late in the evening, I would start work on my stuff. So I'd work on Marcia's stuff first. And then when that was done, I'd go and work on Eddie Grant's stuff. Tiring, very tiring.
And was you surprised how well it did at the time? I mean, it must be very...
Well, I had been doing well, you know. I had, before that, I'd had Do You Feel My Love, worldwide hit. Number 3 in most countries, number 2 in some. I don't know if I got a number 1 with that anywhere. But the reality was, I was on a roll.
Electric Avenue.
Rock it in the night.
Electric Avenue.
I had issues with the record companies around Europe in particular, who just believed that I had just picked up the money and run and were threatening me with lawsuits and all kinds of things. So there was a lot of pressure to deliver the record from which Electric Avenue would come, which became Killer on the Rampage. The fact that we had so many people around at the time, guys working on the house, guys working on the studio, guys working on the apartment, there was a buzz, and people were making comments, you know, who thought which one was going to do what and so on. I'll give you an example. There's a particular guy who was Harold Graves here working on the buildings. He was sort of in charge of the masons. He would be in the studio doing some masonry or something, and he'd hear these songs. And he said to me one day, you know, boss, that song's going to be number one, you know. I think white people are going to like it. Just like that. And I said, well, which one? He says, yeah, the one you're working on. And that song happened to be I Don't Want to Dance. And of all the songs that came out on that record, I Don't Want to Dance is the one that made number ones all over the world, apart from America.
Yeah, it's a great catchy song. It's one of those songs that gets stuck in your head, really, isn't it?
Yeah, well, again, first-class melody, and nothing beats it, really, unless you're from the moon or somewhere, and, you know, you don't understand what melody is all about. Yeah, I Don't Want to Dance, I'm extremely proud of, because it did something for me that nothing else could do. It reassured me of that I hadn't lost it, or I wasn't losing it. And a number one record helps in a lot of ways. It bolsters your imagination, you know, because now you can stretch out a little more. And as you go along on the record, you see me doing that.
And another great song of yours was Give Me Hope, Joanne. Diana. I enjoy listening to that one.
Yeah, well, again, it's done its time. It's still one of my top five. It sort of swaps places with I Don't Want to Dance and Electric Avenue and maybe five more of them. It's one of those special moments in time when something comes together with something else. The politics of the time came together with a great melody and a nice sound and all of that.
In 2018, you performed at Nelson Mandela's 90th birthday concert and at Glastonbury Festival. What are your memories of that time, the experiences?
Well, I'd been working nonstop for 20 years. I hadn't been on stage. And suddenly it dawned on me that I wanted to play. I wanted to go out and play and do the festivals around Europe and so on. Just happens that somebody came up with the idea that Nelson Mandela's 90th birthday and so on and so forth. They just seemed to to come together, you know, to lock in. I said to my business manager at the time, I said, look, you know, I want to do, before I get too old, the major festivals in Europe. And he said, but you haven't played for 20 years, Ed. You know, you'll be rusty. And maybe we should just put you in some clubs, you know, do what everybody else does, go into the small clubs, play them, get your teeth sharp again, and then launch yourself back out on the touring situation. And I said, no, this is what I do. I know it like riding a bicycle. They came in a run. The Nelson Mandela show at Hyde Park was very beautiful. It was an extremely beautiful moment for me in time, and I'm sure for Nelson as well, because everybody was there. And if you look at the video that's doing its rounds on YouTube, you can see that I hadn't lost any sheen. The ball was still shining and turning and twisting as I wanted to do. And then I went on to do the festivals, Glastonbury. I did WOMAD. All the festivals in England, I did those, and went over to Ireland, and then went into Europe, Belgium, Holland. I really enjoyed that. And I was with a new band from South Africa, great players. So we really had a rollicking time on the road, you know?
I was just wondering, when you were growing up, was Chuck Berry a big influence on you? You were a fan of him, weren't you?
I was not a fan of his to start with. I mean, I didn't know him. I came to Chuck Berry by listening to the Beatles and the Stones and all the other. I mean, he was just ubiquitous. He was all over the place. And he was through these young bands coming up. I think at the time he was in jail with a sort of impending release. When I got to hear his name, a friend of mine told me, don't worry with those white guys. They're teething, you know, left, right, and center. You know, people just don't understand how the music business works. So at the end of the day, nobody was teething nothing, but they were just using his songs. And, you know, he was being paid for it, yeah, if he was. And all of that, you know. So I took kind of umbrage at that. And I said, well, you know, I've never heard of him. Whoever he is, I don't think he is that great anywhere else. I'd know him. And I didn't know him. And so then one day my friend came in and he said, hey, Chuck Berry is going to be playing in London. And I thought, well, yeah, so? And he said, so we're going to go and see him. I haven't gotten the money. So I scrunched around however, you know, I could, maybe from my mother or somebody, and was able to get to see the Chuck Berry show featuring Carl Perkins, Nashville Teens, I think it were. I think Big Time Taylor, I think his name was, and the Dominoes. It was just an enlightening moment to see this guy. I mean, all the others were really great, great artists and stuff. Matter of fact, when Carl Perkins came on, he was dynamic. I mean, he played serious guitar, you know? And I said to my friend, I said, hey, listen, whoever this Chuck Berry is, he can't beat that. And little did I know, the magic of Chuck Berry, man. He walked on that stage with his guitar just slung around his shoulder, something like that. And then he lifted his guitar and he said, hello, England. I never forget those words, man. And the place erupted. Honestly, it was like Carl Perkins hadn't been there. And they reeled and rocked into all kinds of Johnny B. Goods and Little Queenie and whatever it was that he had out at the time. And I was shouting and screaming like a girl, you know, all these rockers who were big, strong, strapping guys in leather gear. And they were all screaming like girls, just like how they did for the Beatles. And I thought, wow, this guy, I have got to be like that. So it turned out, I mean, as time went by, I became more and more enwrapped in rock and roll, in particular Chuck Berry. And that's what led me to playing the guitar. Before that, I was playing trumpet.
Oh, what a fantastic gig that must have been.
Really was. And let me tell you something. From that day onwards, Chuck Berry just got my goat, you know, because he would come on stage and not pay attention to what he's doing. He just didn't care, or he's up against Little Richard or something, and then he'll pull it out. But I've seen almost every Chuck Berry show there ever was in England. Everyone.
Fantastic.
And he's teed me off in almost everyone.
And Carl Perkins, didn't he do Blue Suede Shoes? Is that the guy?
Yes, that's the chap. He did Blue Suede Shoes, which Elvis came and did as well. And just about every band that played rock and roll played those particular songs, you know, the songs of Chuck.
ringing a bell. Go, go. Go, Johnny, go, go. Go, Johnny, go, go. Go, Johnny, go, go. Go, Johnny, go, go. Johnny, be good. He used to carry his guitar in a gunny sack. Go sit beneath the tree by the railroad track. Old engineer would see him sitting in the shade, strumming with the rhythm that the drivers made. When people passing by, they would stop and say, oh my, but that little country boy could play. Go, go.
You can get by going to eddiegrant.com and only there. There's no messing about. You just go straight to eddiegrant.com and you will get the downloads you can get. You can get a CD as well, you know, and every and any, don't be like yourself, every and any back numbers, they're all there. You can download them and get it immediately. And with the CDs, you can get it almost immediately.
I've got the album. I've listened to it. It's very good. What three tracks from the album would you like me to play?
Well, you play the one that's out doing the rounds now, which is Carole King Here. Since Down the Road Again is your little favorite, you can play that. And the one that will come after is Carole King Here, which is I Belong to You, which is a ballad, totally different, totally, totally different to what I've done before.
Great. Well, thanks a lot for joining us, Eddie.
It is my pleasure.
Tell me what is the matter? Is Carole King here?
After all the drinks I've known, and after all the steam has blown, one thing that I know is true, I belong to you. Seems like only yesterday run out in the fields to play. Now it's clear as the old sky is blue, I belong to you. When I look down into your eyes, I realize the true meaning of loving you. They're a cross between cinnamon eyes and Brueggemann eyes, and promise hot love can be true. It don't matter what you throw, darling, darling, don't you know? Whether or not the sea is blue, I belong to you. La 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 If I wanted to be in the sun, you'd be the one. Like Ursula, step from the blue, I'd create a Caribbean scene. You know what I mean. With you I would be just like Bond. We'd go down to the beach to dance underneath the moon and stars, like the wave upon your shoe. I belong to you. Baby, when I look in your eyes, it's paradise. My dreams always seem to come true. They're a cross between angel eyes and demon eyes, which promise the world out of you. After all the steam has blown, now after all it seems we've grown. One thing that's forever true, I belong to you. One thing that's forever true, I belong.